Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And on today's episode, we recap the 96th Academy Awards, our favorite moments, the worst moments, and which people should and shouldn't have taken home the golden statue.
Well, the Oscars, they came and went. They happened. And they did not leave me with the same kind of seething rage that they normally do, which is a good thing. But it is the end of Barbenheimer, you know? Officially. It's done.
Damn. This is should I go ahead and add that to the Wikipedia page right now? Like, the end of Barbenheimer marked on March 9th, 2024.
Yeah, give
or is it March 10th?
Give it a shot. March 10th, maybe, and see what Wikipedia editor jumps on you quickest and...
Oh, God. The Wikipedia, this is something I didn't really know about, because, like, never in a million years did I ever consider myself someone who would have even thought about contributing to a Wikipedia page. But the couple times I have tried, like, it's chaos. It's, there's, like, I guess it's probably akin to a subreddit that has out-of-control moderators. Like, it feels like every article of Wikipedia has those moderators.
Yeah. You just have people that are, like, diligently lording over the real estate of the Wikipedia space. It's fascinating.
But it's kind of crazy, though, because on a subreddit, the mods just can do whatever they want and you can't do much about it. But on a Wikipedia page, there are, like, lengthy debates, like, people trading, writing back and forth, like, arguing if this should be on the page or on another page, like... It's just crazy to me that people care that much. I guess that's what drives me crazy every time.
Yeah. I mean, this happened. I got involved in this recently because of, wish I could remember what the movie was. This is going to bother me. There was a movie that came out recently that people didn't know if the S in it should be capitalized or not. or if it should be lowercase. I think it's... No, it's the...
The Sandlot?
I think it's the B in Anyone But You.
Oh. It should be, right?
So people were saying it shouldn't be capitalized because it's being used as a preposition and prepositions aren't capitalized. Right. So it's a lowercase b. So... Capital A in anyone, lowercase b in but, and capital Y in you.
Yeah.
But the official movie, like, title and marketing and everything capitalizes the B.
Yeah. So, and that's what should matter.
Yeah, is that's what the movie is, right? If it's not like if a movie has slang in the title of it that you write, like, the proper spelling of it all and then say stylized as da-da-da. Like, you write it how it is. But I ended up, like, going into the Wikipedia article because I'm that kind of person and seeing that there was a lengthy debate from people arguing about whether or not the butt should be capitalized or not. And it was really annoying to see that kind of cover. Like,
it totally is. It's a sorry, go ahead. You're finishing.
Oh, no. I'm looking now. I left a comment, and I'm just now coming back to it.
Yeah.
And somebody's like, see the Wikipedia manual style titles of works regarding capital letters. But here is a preposition consisting of less than five letters, so it must not be capitalized in the middle of the title of any work. But then
that
somebody
just makes
else
me think of sorry, you're still talking. My bad.
Sorry, I did pause long because I was reading with it. But is a conjunction, Nardog. Regardless, conjunctions are usually lowercase in the title. In this case, it isn't. See wiki, but prepositions. So it's just people now arguing whether it's a conjunction or a preposition, but completely ignoring the fact that it's the proper title name. Like, it's the official name. It doesn't matter what the title is. It matters what, like,
yeah, it's like mother, you know. Mother is a lowercase m.
Yeah, exactly.
If that's the way Darren Aronofsky wants it, like, who are you to say he can't do it?
Yeah, are they capitalizing mother on Wikipedia? They are.
That's yeah, I've seen it spelled many different ways, but Darren Aronofsky, like, that's the way he did it.
Weird. So stylized as mother. It's not stylized as mother. That's just the title.
It's crazy that we have rules for this. Anyway, welcome to the Academy Awards.
Yeah, we're talking about Academy Awards today. The show. We talked about our picks before, and I don't think many of our picks really won.
If picks are in terms of like who I think I should win, then yeah, probably not.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, I'm happy. Like, that's always one of the things that I like about the Oscars, is often how humanizing it is for the actors involved and the people involved. It's like you have an idea of Christopher Nolan based on his movies, but then you hear him give a speech and see how, like, emotionally
proper British fellow.
Yeah, and how kind of like kind he is, and it raises your, like, you know, your human emotion for Christopher Nolan, to where, like, I didn't want Oppenheimer to win. I don't think it should have won, but on the one hand, I'm happy for Nolan now.
Yeah, I watched The Prestige recently and I enjoyed it. I feel like I've been undergoing a little bit of a, I won't go as far to say like reversal on Christopher Nolan. Like, I still inherently have problems with his style and the way he approaches characters and everything. But he does have a certain aesthetic, and just from the way he spoke at the Oscars and just the way he talks about his movies and interviews, like, I've gained a little bit more respect for him and, like, what he's influenced by and what he's going for. Like, I guess mostly what I'm saying is, like, for the first time, I'm realizing, like, why people like his movies, because I never really have. And I don't know. I'm endeared to him a little bit.
Yeah. When he talked about Tenet and said you shouldn't think about it, you should just feel it. I know that won you over.
I don't know. I think more of what it is like, I recognize an amazing movie in him. Like, the way he's talking about movies, I'm like, there's an awesome movie in there. And instead of making Tenet, like, you went and made Oppenheimer. And I just can't figure out, like, how that happened. Like, what part of this path, like what fork in the road did you go right on when you should have gone left, you know?
I mean, he loves his historical dramas.
Yeah. I mean, I know what it is. And when he gets too close to a figure or to an event and, like, wants to speak truth to it in a more boring way. Like, to me, Tenet has so much truth in it about, like, humanity and, like, existentialism and all that. But he gets a little, like, ordinary of something like Oppenheimer, you know? I mean, I don't, we're really getting to the nitty gritty here. I'm going off on a tangent.
But we're happy for him. But there's a revision coming, which, I mean, I'm Prestige, if there's a movie that you're going to be like, oh, that was a good Nolan movie, Prestige is definitely going to be one of those.
Yeah.
Enjoyable. Yeah. Before we get into some of the winners and some thoughts on that, I guess we can go through. We have a list of the best and worst moments from the 2024 Oscars and go over some highlights from the show itself.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, so on this Entertainment Weekly list, it starts off number 1 of 11, Messi's bowtie serve. Oh my God, I'm not kidding. That's the last time I read what they actually wrote. Messi's bow tie serve. Jeez. Okay, the bow tie, like Messi. Messi being there.
Messi, the soccer player?
Exactly. Everybody was really excited to have Lionel Messi there.
I didn't know anything about this because I have not seen Anatomy of a Fall.
3-hour movie.
I mean, I would watch it, but, you know, I haven't found time for it, which is 3 hours.
Yeah, it's good, and Messi does stand out. So it is funny. I've never seen, lots of movies have had animals, but I've never seen an animal be so part of the press tour before.
Oh, it's part of the press tour. Okay. See, again, completely lost on this whole thing. I just didn't understand it, but was happy to see a dog.
Yeah, they've had Messi, like, since, I think Messi was at Cannes, too, and has appeared at, like, various events throughout the rest of the year, and even at different awards shows leading up to the Oscars. In fact, there was a story that came out that other PR people were mad because they thought that Messi was giving Anatomy of a Fall an unfair advantage with voters because they would have liked the dog. So they actually talked about the fact that Messi might have been banned from going to the Oscars. So it was kind of a...
Like Will Smith?
Yeah. Wow. Will Smith, Messi the dog. And so it was kind of a surprise to people that were following Oscar drama when Messi was there, because word had come out that Messi wasn't going to be there.
The phrase "people following Oscar drama" makes me so sad.
Yeah, there's it's become like a huge thing, I guess. Like its own little like niche culture.
It's a weird thing on Twitter. Like Twitter drains the life out of me every time I look at it. But seeing people get so mad about this isn't a great way to introduce this episode because I'm supposed to like care about the Oscars, but like I can't imagine making myself care as much as some people seem to. Like I think you responded to this tweet, somebody who was like, Lily Gladstone losing the Oscar was the worst moment in Oscar history. The Academy is washed. And I'm like, wow, these are such strong emotions for a gold statue. It just seems so silly.
Yeah, they said it was one of the most egregious like wins in history, and it's like, well, that's not like, it's clearly not true.
I just can't imagine what happened. Like, it didn't happen to you. Just settle down. Yeah. Lily Gladstone looks very happy for Emma Stone, like, clap.
Yeah, you get people, I think the thing, like, coming from music Twitter, I feel like music Twitter was, like, often pretty authentic, but mm-hmm. film Twitter feels so much more performative to me a lot of the time. And that one, even if it was, like, a true anger, because I get angry at things winning and not winning and mm-hmm. have strong opinions, but something phrased that way just feels a lot more like, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm on the other end. I can't imagine getting mad.
Yeah, but you...
Like the... I guess I got annoyed when Argo won. but just annoyed.
Yeah. I raged and rave, and I still, to this day, will go into a rant about Argo and The Artist both winning.
I just roll my eyes at it.
They're just tremendously not good movies. They're not... They don't belong... with everything
tremendously
else.
Not good movies. That's the name of your book you'll write someday. Yeah.
Tremendously not good movies. I can't say tremendously not good movies by Chris Lambert. It has to say like a book by Chris Lambert.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Otherwise it sounds like I'm the one making the bad movies and I only make great movies. I've not made a bad movie yet. I haven't made any, but okay. Messi being there, people following Oscar drama, but yeah, it was cool seeing Messi. And then the moment where they had the dog arms waving as he was clapping, like, it's a dumb thing. And there was a photo that came out after, I don't know if you saw the photo after, of a guy literally laying on the ground with his head under the chair, and he's just holding the fake Messi legs in the air to do the clap.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen the guy. I mean, I knew they were putting the the dog paws up, but I didn't see the picture of the guy on the ground.
Yeah, just a guy on the ground hanging out.
My wife got so annoyed by that moment.
How come?
She was just like, she's like, enough of this dog. Like, now we're like, we're using props, like, move on.
It was a lot. They show the dog, they keep showing the dog, they use the props for the dog, but I liked it.
It was fine. Yeah, I didn't mind it.
Yeah. And then Ryan Gosling's glee when he looked over and saw Messi applauding on the monitor. That was the best part.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, cut from showing Messi clapping to Ryan Gosling looking, and you see him kind of like looking over at the monitor, and then he breaks into a huge smile because you assume he saw Messi.
Yeah, he saw a dog that's as cute as he is.
It's the eyes. They both have those special eyes. So they also mention, wow, okay. I didn't notice this before, but you know, this is an article that says best and worst. So best is supporting actresses supporting other supporting actresses, and then worst, supporting actors supporting other supporting actors.
I would go further than that. When they started doing the supporting actress one, like, I kind of cringed a little bit, and I was like, oh, this feels like something that's not going to work and take way too long. Like, that one was pretty good, and especially since, like, they all seem to know each other, you know? Like, they were actually commenting on their friends being nominated. But after that, like, it was sort of every single one after that. Supporting actor, best actress. Like, to me, it all felt stripped of that camaraderie and, like, emotion. It felt a little bit more... like static, and like they were just reading their lines, you know.
I guess I liked it all. It did it. I can see that, like, it's starting to feel a little forced, but I guess I believed a lot of the emotion and like the sentiment of it. So I was kind of a sucker for all of it.
I mean, look, I'm not trying to be too cynical. I agree. Like, it's a nice thing that they did. I want the Oscars to experiment and try new stuff, but I think what just got me was just how, like, they were clearly reading from a transcript. Like, I mean, what else are they supposed to do? They're not supposed to write it themselves, but, like, also, couldn't they? Like, couldn't it feel a little more genuine and, like, off the cuff? But, like, again, the supporting actress one did feel like that a little bit.
Yeah, I guess I...
Tim Robbins is, like, flubbing lines, and it just feels a little, like... I guess it just felt a little reverent to me in a way that the supporting actress one didn't. That one just felt like of celebration, you know?
It was very charming. Like, they were very, like, all very nice to each other. But I guess I chalked it up more to some of them. I don't know how. I feel like even if the others did write their own thing, they still would have read it from the prompter, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, and again, that's just like, I feel like that's the only issue here is this kind of thing, like how you're trying to speak to somebody and you're like looking at the camera. It just felt like it didn't inherently, aesthetically, it didn't quite work in the way all the other stuff does. Like when who's the woman from Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Coleman, is that her name?
Octavia Spencer.
Why am I saying Coleman?
I don't know.
Oh, I think I'm, Octavia Spencer. When they were, like, riffing, like, you know, they're reading from a transcript, but, like, it feels organic, like, it's their sense of humor. Like, none of those people reading about all the other actors, like, it's from the heart in the sense that they respect each other, but it's not from the heart in the sense that, like, someone wrote a thing for them to read, you know?
I like to think they all wrote their own words.
There's no fucking way. There's no way.
Call me like a hopeless romantic.
Like none of that sounded like, all that felt like it read the exact same way to me.
Yeah, but you know, I hope
there were some people though that did liven it up, like Sam Rockwell, like put his Sam Rockwell energy into it, you know. But not everyone was like that.
You can't convince me that what Sam Rockwell read wasn't like his own words, or at least like partially his own words.
That's what I mean. Is like, I think he just kind of went off the book a little bit,
which is very Sam Rockwell-y of him to
absolutely
do.
Oh, and I will also say that I did enjoy, I'll just watch Christoph Waltz do it. Like, I could watch that man talk for hours. Like, he is just a fascinating person to me.
I also thought I would watch him do anything until I saw him in Bond. And he's so bad in those movies.
I completely disagree.
Horrible misuse. I don't think he's bad. I think they misused him and made him bad.
Huh. I literally just watched Spectre and I really loved it.
Oh, I hate Spectre.
Yeah, but you also really like Casino Royale, and that movie's really, really lame.
What the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck? All right. Well, I guess we're going to have a Daniel Craig Bond marathon at some point.
It'll just be me complaining for the most part until we get the Spectre.
Yeah, and then it'll be me complaining about you. About you. Did you watch the last one?
Getting ready to watch it for the second time. Because I have all of them on 4K. We've been going through them. I don't remember liking it that much. Big reason was like the reverence it had for Bond. Like, I just don't connect with that at all. But I'm interested to watch it again because I didn't... I liked Spectre the first time, but I really liked it this time. So I'm wondering if, you know, maybe the same thing will happen for No Time to Die.
What did you like so much about Spectre?
I just, well, first and foremost, I ended up liking Skyfall a lot more than I did the first time. I've always kind of been down on Skyfall. I was always annoyed by kind of how obvious it was and the whole like nostalgia for old Bond. But this time when I watched it, I think I understood the aesthetic of it a little bit more and like how Sam Mendes was designing the film and how it was commentary on like Bond moving on from the past and defining himself and not being tied down by, you know, everything that always tied him down. And then I just thought Spectre was such a brilliant extension of that and somebody working on themselves, basically. That's what I think is a cool thing about the series, even though I think the first two kind of suck, that they've slowly and gradually been building Bond as somebody who's like learning to work from within and become more empathetic and open and working with people and being able to have a relationship. And I just thought like the way Spectre was designed and how it slowly unravels his character and he gets closer and closer to this guy that opens up his past so much. I just thought it was just on a surface level, the way it's designed and the way it feels and how effortless it's edited and all that. It just, I was kind of amazed by it. Like there wasn't to me ever a dull moment in it.
I like everything as you're describing it. That all sounds, I think seeing the movie that way sounds lovely. Just the way I see the movie is all math, you know? And of course, the math is bad. The math is wrong.
The math could be completely off, and I and I will accept that if that's the case.
I made that joke to somebody. They said something about some aspect of Dune 2. They're like, that's subjective. And I was like, no, it's math. There's math you can use to prove it. And they're like, oh, tell me more. I was like, I was kidding. But if you'd like to know more.
If only this show was popular even a little bit, they would have known that it was a joke.
Yeah, they would have an idea like, oh, that's an inside joke that Chris and Travis have. Nope.
You think it's funny now, but someday if the show does get popular, you will be bombarded with math jokes on Twitter.
Yeah, or people screaming at me about how art isn't math and I need to understand that and get that through my dumb head.
Either way, it's not going to be a fruitful conversation.
Okay.
Hi there. It's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
So dividing opinions on, I do agree that the idea of having people read from a prompter as they're trying to say something very heartfelt, and then even asking them to get like off prompter when they're supposed to be like relaxing and having a good time, it does feel like, even if there's a good idea there, that the execution leaves a lot to be desired.
Exactly. That's all I'm saying is like, just let them go up there and talk about the people they like. Put a minute time limit on their little monologue and like, that's it.
Yeah. Maybe you have like a Sam Rockwell that really likes, what's his face? But Robert Downey. But yeah. You don't know if Tim Robbins is really going to like
Robert De Niro. Yeah, probably not.
Do those two get along? Yeah, who was the other? It was best supporting actor, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, no, it was best actor. Yeah, does, like, Tim Robbins have nice things to say about, oh, no, supporting actor, yeah. Nice things to say about, like, Mark Ruffalo? Do they know each other? Have they ever talked? Yes. So there is a little force there.
I'm just sitting here complaining about like them doing something. Like it was great. Like they should try stuff like that. That was cool. I like everybody that walked up there and gave a speech. Like I want to hear them talk.
Yeah. And then there was the drama though of like, I don't know if you saw the aftermath of the fact that when Downey went up there, he took the award, but he didn't really shake everybody's hands.
Yeah, I saw that. But then as he was walking away, he was shaking I don't want to butcher his name, the guy from Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like he was talking to him and everything, so I mean it's just in the moment. I'm sure he just got up there and wanted to get moving.
Yeah. Kwan, seems like, I mean, they had photos together afterwards, like at the after party with their arms around each other and like hugging and talking. So there were people making apology. They're like, you have 45 seconds. You're kind of like flustered and rushed. And then there was somebody that was commenting about how Cillian Murphy like shook everybody's hand and like spent time with everybody. I was like, yeah,
British.
Who wouldn't do that? Like, it's the polite thing to do. And then I'm seeing that both like Robert Downey Jr. skipped over people. And there was the confusion with Emma Stone, where when she went up to get the award, Michelle Yeoh had like looked off to the side for Jennifer Lawrence. And so Emma Stone was looking at her, but she was looking away. And then when Michelle looked back, Emma looked away and they missed each other. So people were like, oh, Emma Stone, like not only did she beat Lily Gladstone, she like wasn't nice to the fellow like winners. And Michelle Yeoh actually took to Instagram and was like, no, it was my fault. And like, she's wonderful and lovely. Like, my goodness.
What was it earlier that you said? People who care about Oscar drama?
Yeah.
Yeah, those people.
Yeah, they get hyper involved in it.
And something they weren't there for and don't understand. Got it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess that's social media to a T.
Yeah, you see one thing out of context and you start a whole narrative about the person and what happened.
You start a movement. You start a hashtag that gets to a Wikipedia page.
That is very true. You do start a movement. It says Teamsters get a standing O. So Jimmy Kimmel gave a shout out to the Teamsters and IATSE members.
Yeah.
They're gearing up for a potential strike. It was nice to see like Kimmel on behalf of like, you know, SAG-AFTRA and the Directors Guild and the Writers Guild kind of saying that they're going to stand with the crew members.
I will say in general, I don't know. I guess I didn't have any strong feelings about Jimmy Kimmel heading into this. Like, I don't really remember his other Oscars that well. I guess I remember him. But I don't, for whatever reason, like going into it, I was like, do I like Jimmy Kimmel? Am I going to enjoy this? And then he starts telling jokes. I look at my wife and I'm like, these are the exact kinds of jokes I tell all the time. Like just always talking, just telling like terrible, corny, lame jokes and hoping people laugh at me. and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, so you liked Kimmel's performance?
Yeah. I was very entertained by him.
I go back and forth. There's times where I'm like, that's a great Kimmel moment. I like his overall like demeanor and energy, but I think I'm just a little tired of Kimmel at this point.
Do you watch his show or something?
I see interviews from it every now and then. It's not like I don't have cable. God. But do you have cable? Yeah.
No, I mean, I guess you can see clips on YouTube.
Yeah, I'll see clips on YouTube like maybe one a month or every other month or something. But he's hosted the Oscars.
Yeah.
How many times now?
So I've seen it several times.
Yeah, I don't mind it too much, but there's still like times where I'm like, okay, like especially the opening monologue when he mentions like the nudity in Poor Things, or he's talking about Robert Downey Jr. like used to have like a drug problem. It's like you're really going for some of the low-hanging fruit here.
But I feel like that's all, that is the point, to just like beat the obvious joke into the ground. Like, I think that's funny. It almost felt like a lot of his humor was, I guess it just felt very millennial-y to me. Like, a lot of jokes about things that younger people might not, like, do people even, a lot of young people know that Robert Downey Jr. had a drug problem? Like, he's just Iron Man to them. And just, again, really lame, corny jokes that I feel like are of another era. Like, like when he was talking about Yorgos Lanthimos, and he's like, we got two Yorgos in the house tonight. Who will win? Yorgos as good as mine. Like, that to me is, like, high quality jokage.
That's a great joke.
And the other one I liked was when he was talking about Emma Stone played an adult woman with the brain of a child, just like the lady who gave the rebuttal to the State of the Union on Thursday night. Which I was like, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's a good joke too.
And the last one I'll say, because this is another thing that feels like of another time, like lusting over Ryan Gosling, like dudes being attracted to Ryan Gosling, is when he just stops and looks at him and goes, Ryan, you are so hot, let's go camping together and not tell our wives.
Yeah, these things are all good.
Yeah, it's quality work. Yeah. I mean, you're right, there's probably a lot of not so good stuff in there, but you live for the highlights.
Yeah, that's true. If that's all that sticks with us is the highlights, then it's pretty good.
Yeah.
There was a lot of Mother's Day-ing. Oh, apparently they told him not to read the Trump tweet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was something. They told him he had extra time. He's like, I'm going to read the tweet. And some people are like, you shouldn't. And he's like, I'm going to do it. They're like, you shouldn't. They didn't specify if it was somebody from the Oscars themselves who was saying, like, don't do this. Or if it was just people being like, you're going to give him a platform or something, but he did it. And I thought it was just like a random, like, it worked for me because I thought it was just a random Twitter person that was having a meltdown. And then
it was.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Again, I'm not on Twitter at all. And like, I'm pretty checked out of politics in general. Like, I follow the things that I think are important, and Trump is not on that list. So it was a nice little reminder that he's still crazy, you know?
Yeah. Still absurd. Still ridiculous. There was a lot of happy Mother's Day-ing. I didn't realize that the UK had a different Mother's Day than the US.
Yeah. That was fun to learn.
Yeah. I feel like, why not just standardize it, you know?
Yeah. And while we're at it, let's just drive on the same side of the street.
The world over. That's my platform. Elect me world leader.
Is this what you've been using the podcast for, as a jumping off platform to become the leader of the free world?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Who knows if it'll still be free under my watch.
But I think if you want to achieve something like that, you at the very least have to learn how to say see you at the same time as me at the end of this episode.
It's going to happen. Just you watch. I didn't realize that was Sean Lennon. When he said Yoko, I was like, Yoko?
Yeah. Because his short was based on a Yoko and John Lennon song.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it won.
Love that shit.
Nepotism wins again, Travis.
Yeah. God, I wish I could have a Nepo baby. My wife's just an engineer, though, so.
Yeah. Nepotism's a big thing in wrestling. And there was one wrestler who, Becky Lynch, who got married and had a kid with Seth Rollins, who's another wrestler. And they're both like top of the card, big names in the WWE. And
I know them.
Oh, you know them?
No, I don't.
Oh, hell.
How big could they be?
But Becky was saying that she used to like have a chip on her shoulder about like nepotism kids. And she's like, now I have a nepotism kid. And I get it. It's like, yeah. this is saying we're stunting on the Oscars. Talking about stunts. So Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt up there, and they honor the stunt people a little bit, but still no award. I really do wish that they had an award for best stunts.
That's nuts that they don't have one.
I know. Best animated feature wasn't a thing until 2001.
After Toy Story, they're like, God, we got to give something like this an award.
Yeah. I mean, Lion King, Aladdin, like all those great 90s animated, 80s and 90s animated movies, did it get an award? So I saw something that was like, Boy and the Heron is only the second hand-drawn movie to ever win the best animated feature. And it's like, well,
Spirited Away was the other one.
Yeah, and that's because the awards like started in the era where everybody moved away from it. So it's not like it's only like the greatest hand-drawn movie ever made or something. It's just the other ones couldn't win.
There have been a couple times. I think Beauty and the Beast got nominated for Best Picture. There were a couple times where animated movies did that.
I didn't realize it would have gotten nominated for Best Picture. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But it was nice seeing, like, I forgot that Gosling and Blunt were going to be in Fall Guy together.
Yeah. That so, looks good, actually.
Yeah, seeing them, like, kind of bicker about Barbenheimer stuff was pretty funny. Like, I like that moment.
I did too. They said this was the worst moment.
Worse because of the stunt workers not actually having an award, so it felt kind of like throwing them a bone.
Oh. Okay.
But I guess I like to think it's a step in the direction of it being a thing. I don't know what process has to go for like a new award category to be made.
Well, they're doing two new ones next year.
Are they?
Yeah, I think Jimmy Kimmel talked about it. Maybe he did it. Maybe my wife just told me about it. But they're having like best cast or something like that. You know, a lot of award shows do the like best ensemble cast or something.
Oh yeah, achievement in casting.
Casting, okay.
So it's not even like the best ensemble. It's like casting directors play an essential role in filmmaking.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so the news comes after years of pressure from casting directors seeking greater recognition.
Fuck stunt people. Get the casters in there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you don't have a movie without the casting directors, but I just think it's funny to think of like big casting bullying people around until they get an award.
I'm going to tell this joke, and then I'm going to tell you another joke that I thought of that I said while I was watching the Oscars. Being inspired by Jimmy Kimmel, I can't wait for them someday to have the best boy award. And now here's the second joke that I said during the moment where Jimmy Kimmel brought out all of the crew workers. I think I was a little bit high when I watched the Oscars, so I was kind of going on a rant, but I was like they should just bring out like every single crew member who's in an Oscar nominated movie. So like just like hundreds of people like start pouring into the room, even all the best boys, like all the best boys get in there too. And it's just like the entire auditorium's filled with the extras. Anyway, that's my joke.
I enjoyed it. I enjoy the energy.
You gotta have fun with the Oscars.
Yeah. I mean, what else are you going to do? Complain about the movies? John Cena.
that was surprising.
I mean, I saw a behind the scenes thing, and he was wearing like a little a little cup.
I'm sure.
But yeah, that was very, if there's a way to get attention to your new movie, that's a good way of doing it.
I mean, it was uncomfortable in the good way. Like, I was just so blown away they were that bold about it. So I applaud them.
Yeah, I thought having him kind of look back and he's shirtless was one thing, but him actually having to inch his way all the way across the stage,
yeah,
it was making me laugh the more it was going on.
They did really drag it out.
Yeah. And then the quick change, there was behind the scenes video of the quick change, which was pretty good. Like a bunch of people just ran out and put a robe on him and suddenly he's clothed. It made me wish we would have gotten Coyote versus Acme, because it felt like a gag out of a Wile E. Coyote cartoon or something.
Yeah. There's a huge audience for that right now, so that would have really hit home.
I mean, do you know all the drama with that movie?
Actually, yeah, you're right. I forgot that there was stuff going on. Again, off Twitter, so I miss a lot of this, but I did know a little bit about that.
Yeah. It seems like it would have been good. Then it talks about the Diane inside. The Academy is just trolling Diane Warren at this point, nominating her for a 15th Best Original Song. And but it definitely stood out from the other nominees for not being good. I didn't think it was a particularly, it wasn't great or anything, but I didn't think it was bad.
I don't really understand what the hate's about. Generally at the Oscars, I feel like this is a trend. Like, every song gets kind of stripped down and they kind of do a basic version of it. But then there's one song that's big and blown up. So, you know, like Let It Go from Frozen. It's a whole fucking number. They're putting on a show. Same with the Ken song this year. So I guess this song, I'm just looking like, yeah, this is what they always do with these songs. It's just like a low key rendition of a song. I don't see what there is to be upset about it.
Yeah. Okay. I guess some kids on stage for no reason.
So what? Is there, I assume there's kids in the song, I guess?
It's from the Flaming Hot, like, documentary.
Yeah, but, like, it's just a song from the movie. So, like, they made a song for the movie. There could have been kids in the song. I mean, maybe there wasn't. Even if there wasn't, I don't think I would give a shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bunch of cute kids. What are you complaining about?
Yeah, they got to be on stage and act and have a good time. Then Ryan Gosling's Kenergy. Which,
I mean, great.
Gosling did show up and show out.
Yeah, fucking awesome.
Like, he had the whole room captivated. Great performance. He was legitimately, that was a live mic in his hand.
Oh, I'm sure he's seen it, yeah.
Yeah, there were times he, like, almost laughed, and you could hear it in his voice as he, like, started his notes. Which, like, that kind of impressed me more than anything, but there were a lot of like Hollywood throwbacks in it and it was a good time.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie just like laughing hysterically. It was also very endearing.
Yeah, right.
Though I did see a viral tweet that was like, La La Land people need to let it go. Like, just stop.
Yeah.
Just having that moment with Gosling and Emma Stone got a lot of people nostalgic.
Yeah, I mean, they've done three movies together.
I know. It's kind of crazy. When's the fourth?
Not for several years. I know. Wow. It's been, what, La La Land came out in 2016?
2017?
I mean, shit. Let's get another one going. We need one a decade.
Yeah. I mean, we're almost midway through this decade without one.
This is ridiculous.
So there's the In Memoriam that got a worst. Which the In Memoriams, I feel like that's a hard thing to,
everyone complains about it.
Yeah, maybe it's not a hard thing to get right. You play some somber music and you show everybody. But this time they had Andrea Bocelli singing live and dancers going on, which turned it from kind of feeling like a memoriam to almost like a show.
Yeah.
Which was a little strange.
That was the weird part of it. Like, it had several different scenes. Like, there were different sections of the In Memoriam. And they kept, like, you know, go into a new group of people, and like they would rise up from nowhere, and then there would be dancers, and it's like that kind of stuff is fine, but it feels weird for the In Memoriam because the focus should be on the people who died. And they made that weird move this year where like the names are on a screen, but the screen isn't the screen you're watching. The screen is in the background. So you have to like look, you have to squint and read the tiny names on the screen that's far away. Just like, what was the choice here? It just seemed really, I don't know. It just didn't fit what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, not at all. It distracted. Which but I didn't think about it much at the time, but now in the time like we've been talking about it before recording and now, it's started annoying me more and more.
That's all that was happening when my wife and I were watching. We were just so annoyed. I was like, I'm trying to read the names, but like they're going by fast, and like there's one way over there, and then there's one way over there. And the thing that drove me the most nuts was at the very end, they just like flash like a shitload of names on the screen. Like, here's all the people we didn't have time for, and it's Kenneth Anger, Terrence Davies, Treat Williams. I'm like, these are big names. Like, you can't just toss these people in at the end.
Yeah,
it's Reddick.
It feels very, it's just like dubious.
I just don't understand the approach at all. Like you said, it's a very easy thing to do.
Yeah, I didn't realize Suzanne Summers had passed too.
Yeah. So, there was somebody that I didn't realize had died. Oh, I don't think I had realized Tom Wilkinson had died.
I don't think I knew that either.
Man, I just watched Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and all I could. Ever since that movie, I was like, man, Tom Wilkinson's so good. I had no idea.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so it's a shame not only this how the names were presented or how the people were memorialized, but then the names that get left off or bumped into a lesser section. Yeah.
It just bummed me out because like if someone sees Terrence Davies' name and then like goes and looks him up and finds about all of his movies, that's... I romanticize that, but he's dropped it at the end like that. And like, there's a little tiny name on a screen far away. Like, no one's going to read that.
No. It kind of made me roll my eyes that the Hollywood Reporter made an article about Lance Reddick, Treat Williams, Terrence Davies omitted from In Memoriam segments.
Yeah.
But they call Terrence Davies Terrence Davis in the headline. So it's like you're being critical of the Oscars for not honoring these people correctly, and you misspell the name, and you're the Hollywood Reporter. I get maybe publishing it and having the name wrong, but it's been multiple days and no correction. And then also in like the image, it says clockwise from top left, and they say Terrence Davis again. So two opportunities to get his name right and they get it wrong. But at least in the article itself, it says Davies. But it's just like, kind of expect better from a publication like
that.
Yeah,
maybe they were being meta.
Yeah,
like, they fucked up, we'll fuck up.
That's it. Good call. I should have figured that out. And then it says the end of Barbenheimer. That's the last one they have on this list. So just kind of giving some... reflection on the fact that Barbenheimer was such like a big deal and both movies did so well.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome when all that happened.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
My personal favorite part is not included in this list, which shows how flawed of a list that it is.
Of course.
Was the John Mulaney section.
That was really awesome. I mean, he just did a bit from his stand-up act, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, he's done that with, The Fugitive is the one where he goes on and starts talking about, like,
yeah,
breaking down The Fugitive and going very, like, zoomed in on details of the film. It was funny to hear him do that with Field of Dreams.
Yeah. It's just so unexpected. Like, there's such a, like, even if a speech feels of somebody's personality, like, they all kind of read the same in a way. But it purely felt like John Mulaney. Like, they said, like, hey, man, just go up there and do what you do. Like, we're not going to write anything. And he did.
Yeah. And it was awesome. I want him to host the Oscars.
That would be great.
Like, give me John Mulaney. Or I don't know if you caught, when we're done, you should hop on YouTube and watch Adi Bryant do the Independent Spirit Awards hosting.
Oh, I like her.
She crushed it. Like, nice. Legitimately hilarious. Her opening segment was fantastic. I don't think she would be a big enough name to get to host the Oscars, but man, if she's a sign of the kind of other people that could be hosting.
Yeah.
Get us a Mulaney, get us a Bryant.
For sure. I love it.
Okay. Any other moments or anything you want to highlight?
No. Let's move on to the awards.
Okay. Let's see how quickly you can burn through this.
Yeah.
Best visual effects, Godzilla Minus One.
What page are you looking at for this?
Wikipedia's 96 Academy Awards.
I thought that would show up. Okay, there it is. I thought it would show up as like the first option on Google, and it didn't. All right, I got it.
Okay. So Godzilla Minus One winning best visual effects. I liked that the whole group.
That was amazing.
Yeah, Godzilla shoes. They had like Godzilla heels on their shoes and then Godzilla figurines in hand.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I was happy for them. I respected Yamazaki like trying to do the speech in English as well. Though yeah. When they started playing the music, I was like, don't play the music.
That was pretty great too, because the woman was like standing next to him, like trying to like coach him through it a little bit.
Yeah,
like she's talking out loud and like saying it out of the side of her mouth, like nobody can see this, but like we can all see it. It was great.
Yeah, yeah, it was charming. It was very charming. I'm happy yeah. for them too. Like they overachieved so strongly. So like, congrats for the recognition.
Yeah, for sure.
Best film editing went to Oppenheimer.
Which at the time I made this joke, I'm just gonna repeat. I want to make it clear that I'm repeating jokes that I've already told my wife before I tell them. Okay. When Jennifer Lame won that award, I was like, well, she did have to edit a lot of montages in that movie, so it's kind of deserved.
Yeah, that's essentially the whole movie is just a montage.
Yeah, she did the most work probably of any of the people nominated.
Yeah, so that was my like acceptance of it, was just like, yeah, it's a huge movie and she had to edit it into a compelling montage, which is his whole style. So okay.
Yeah. I will also say, by the way, that I found it strange, and I thought this would be more controversial, people would be talking about it, that Killers of the Flower Moon was nominated for best editing, because that movie did not have an editor.
But
again, Jimmy Kimmel. Thank you, everybody.
What, 3 hours, 15 minutes?
3 hours, 28 minutes, I think.
28
minutes.
But
still, there were scenes that would just play out for so long, you were like, where are we going?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it got real heavy edited at the end. And I was like, now it's going, like, too fast. best costume design, Poor Things. I get it, but I still feel like Napoleon was more impressive.
Well, again, math. There was definitely more work done in Napoleon. You had all that entire army.
You had an army. That's math is exactly what I was thinking about. I was like, I'm going to mention that Napoleon had more going on than Poor Things, and it's going to lead to math. And it did. It's math.
Yeah. Plus, someone had to make that hat.
Yeah. So, Napoleon. Best makeup and hairstyling, Poor Things.
I just watched Maestro, and that was truly incredible what they did making Bradley Cooper look old. Like, I was blown away by how good that looked. I was kind of rooting for them.
I still haven't. Did you like it? Was it good?
Oh yeah, I didn't expect to like it that much. I was like, it's just gonna be like a standard biopic. I really enjoyed it.
Nice. Okay, I need to finally get on that. I do think that Society of the Snow should have won this one.
Oh yeah, that seems like, yeah, actually thinking about that, I haven't seen it, but thinking about the kind of work they'd had to do in it, you could see that winning.
Yeah, the transformation the characters go through, like visually, and how necessary that is to the story, which, like, the math of it, it just works in Society of the Snow's favor.
Poor Things was going through that. It's part of just the annoying part of the Oscars. Like, it was clearly a race between, like, Poor Things and Oppenheimer for Best Picture, it seemed like, because Poor Things, like, would win enough categories, you know, to get enough to win Best Picture. So it's the kind of movie where, like, you do give it a bunch of stuff like that, like costume, makeup, editing, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's the best, so we'll give it to that. But it wasn't Best Picture. So Best Cinematography went to Oppenheimer, which I still think that's wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there was a lot there, but I feel like Poor Things was, like, visually a much more interesting and dynamic movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Maestro, but I'd even say Killers of the Flower Moon over Oppenheimer.
And yeah, it's a pretty movie, and a bunch of beautiful black and white photography. There's a bunch of interesting tracking shots they do. Yeah, I mean, who knows what half the people are even voting for when they vote for Best Cinematography, though.
Yeah, is it flow? Is it just the fact that, like, you have a scene that stands out in somebody's mind? Is it the whole aesthetic of it?
Because, like, what about Oppenheimer is that great? Like, I don't even know. There's just the one nuclear bomb shot, and that wasn't even that interesting, really.
It really wasn't. So, like, was it the fact that you have, like, a lot of medium close-ups on people and some, like... Is it the fact that you just have those physics scenes, which I would say are too brief to even really warrant consideration? I feel the same way about Interstellar. Yeah. Like, the space scenes in Interstellar are so brief and so few.
That is weird.
Almost think that it's wrong to give the movie credit for being, like, a visually good space movie.
That to me is, like, that's Nolan to a T. Like, he's a little too static for me. Like, he doesn't allow his movies to flourish in that way sometimes. And yeah, you're right. Noting those scenes, like, I don't know why those don't play out more and, like, have more fluidity and flow into, like, the, you know, the breath of the scene. Like, it's just kind of statically done.
Yeah, and they make for good still photos when you look back on the movie. Like, look at this shot. But in the movie, it's legitimately like 7 seconds of the runtime.
Yeah.
Is this momentarily, like, cool, interesting shots.
That's what happened with Oppenheimer. I saw some tweet that was calling out those shots, and they were showing all the colors and everything. I was like, yeah, that does look pretty cool. And this guy is going off on a tangent talking about how beautiful it is and everything it says about the movie. But when you watch it, like, I was like, how did you have that reaction to this? Like, it was so short and, like, free of, like, emotion. Like, I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's cool in that it, like, sets a mood early on, but you never return to that. It's not like... No. What's the Aronofsky movie where they are going through the fountain? Like, the fountain at least, like, makes a whole thing of it and creates this atmosphere and space that it works. The same thing with Terrence Malick in not Brave New World, but it's Tree of Life.
Tree of Life.
Yeah. Like, you get to kind of be in those shots and scenes. 2001 A Space Odyssey, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Production design, Poor Things.
Man, Barbie should have won that. Like, they went all out on that, the Barbie world.
The Barbie world was insane. Yeah, I do think Barbie's a front runner, but I'm not mad with Poor Things because the world was so...
Yeah.
There was such, like, texture and tangibility to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Through the sets, it wasn't, like... It didn't feel very CGI, but the fact that you have, like, the math of it, the ship, like, the city of Alexandria, where they stop at the port, like, Portugal felt different, God's house in London felt different. There was just such, like, a tactful nature to the film.
Yeah, and I guess you could argue that Barbie's, like, a little in your face, like, a little simple, and how just obvious and pink everything is. Like, they're not being subtle at all.
No, it's not subtle, but it is very, like, alive and cool. Yes. In how it goes. But is it as dynamic as Poor Things? Does the math, how does the math balance out?
I don't know. We're going to have to go to the chalkboard on this one.
But yeah, I agree. Those were the two, like, front runners, or at least, like, I would have been happy with Barbie winning.
Mm-hmm.
Best sound, Zone of Interest. That's like a hands down no-brainer.
Yeah, I didn't see it, so I don't know anything about it. It's the only one of these five I haven't seen.
When are you gonna get to see it, Travis?
I will. I want to see it. I just, you know, gotta make the time for it. And there are too many old film noirs and romantic comedies from the 40s that I need to watch.
I know how to make you make the time for it.
You do. I mean, yeah, it's gonna be your pick, so.
Yeah. Huh, huh, huh. Okay.
You can pick whatever fucking movie you want. I'll watch it.
And I extend the same to you.
Showgirls Part 2.
Oh, God.
The Showgirls sequel.
Yeah. The Showgirling. Best original song. I felt very strongly about this, too. What Was I Made For?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Remind me, when does this play in the movie?
Serious question or like Jimmy Kimmel joke setup?
Is it the end of the movie? Is it the end?
Yeah, it's the end of the movie.
Okay,
yeah.
That's what I wanted to ask. I've seen the movie twice now. And Chris, you have a very strong... speak about your profound, close relationship to this song here.
It just makes me fucking cry every time I hear it.
It's that simple.
Yeah, I think it's so beautiful. Like, I've always thought Billie Eilish was like talented in the way that like most pop stars are talented. Mm-hmm. But there was something about this song that it made me think like, oh, Billie Eilish is like that good. Mm-hmm. And just the way that she's able to use her voice in the song, I don't, maybe a lot of people do, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
The delicacy in it, like the fragility to it, is astounding. And kind of every time she performs it, whether it was on SNL or at the Oscars, how much emotion she gives to it and yields to it is so impressive to me. Also, the origin of the song, apparently Greta approached Billie about doing a song for it and had her watch like the scene and the movie. And Billie had said that she was actually in like the worst writer's block of her life. Mm-hmm. And was in a point of not really knowing what to say about anything and how she felt about anything. And that this was the first time that she wrote a song from another person's perspective rather than just trying to write from her own perspective, which she had been struggling with for a while. But by trying to get into this character's head and think like, what is this other person feeling? Which is what you do when you're like novel writing, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It actually got her to tap into emotions she hadn't known how to express. So even though she wrote it as someone else for someone else, it became about all of these things she was feeling. And so it's this like outpouring of emotion that she hadn't been able to put words to, which I just think is so cool and really like comes through in a way that makes a song feel vital and alive in a way that so much music that I hear doesn't.
Yeah, No, that's, I think that's all on point. I agree about Billie Eilish. Like, I don't listen to her often, but there have been times I've seen glimpses of like, oh, like she does something really cool. And at the Oscars in particular, like, yeah, her doing that song, like, it was almost like her voice, you're right, there was such fragility to it that it had a, it carried a very, very different tone than most people singing, like, especially like a popular song or like a song being performed at the Oscars that's supposed to entertain you. Like, she's able to create that. Just her voice almost sounded like it had an ambient tone, like it was like otherworldly in that way. It was really cool. I will say that the song never stuck out to me that much though before this, and I never really cared to listen to it because I think because of its place in the movie. The second time I watched Barbie, it was the thing that stuck out to me the most. It's like the movie's pretty good, but kind of wavers at the end. And I think really not falls apart, but like kind of loses me at the very end when Barbie's like talking to like the woman that created Barbie. Like it starts to feel a little bit too on the nose. And it's just getting away from all the stuff I found interesting in the movie and the way it was telling its story that I just don't think it allows that song to flourish in the way it should. That's just me. I think that's why I never connect with the song that much.
I do get that part becoming like a bit cheesier, a bit more like straightforward and simple. And that's when the song plays, is when she like takes Barbie's hand and lets her see all of the, like what it's like to be alive.
Right.
And all of those emotions, but that also just makes me cry. So even if it's obvious, it's like hitting an emotional chord that works for me.
Yeah, it makes me feel inhuman that it doesn't hit me, but it never did for whatever reason.
Ah, you monster.
But most of the movie, I mean, a lot of the movie does hit and makes me cry and shit, just not the ending.
Not the part that's designed specifically.
Yeah, the part where she's on the bus bench, I cry.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Best original score, Oppenheimer. Which, okay.
That guy, he does all the big movies now, so that almost felt like an award that's like honoring him.
What movies does he... Let's see. My God. Yeah, this is a lot of movies.
I saw him once, and I looked him up because I saw that Hans Zimmer didn't do the score, you know, for Oppenheimer. And I was like, who's this guy? And I was like, holy shit.
He got started in a strange place.
I don't know anything about him.
So looking at just like the movies he started with, it was Marley and Me was the first movie he did. So like, fuck him for that movie. Just anybody involved in that movie.
He's the one who made you cry, that music he used.
Yeah, I didn't even see the movie, but just knowing the movie exists. And then did Year One. Which,
wow,
that was a bullshit movie too. And then Jennifer's Body, 30 minutes or less, Into Fruitvale Station, and there then we're the Millers, Stretch, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, A Merry Friggin' Christmas, top five. Oh. So he went from like pretty big name movies or like known movies to a stretch of doing like a handful that nobody kind of knew.
Well, I know The House That Dreaded Sundown. It's a horror movie.
Of course
movie.
You do.
That was the one that got me interested for the first time of all the movies you were reading.
Yeah, the one that had the box office of $120,000. That's the one you know.
Oh, that's the one everyone knows, right?
Yeah, of course. And then came back with Creed, I guess, having done Fruitvale Station with Coogler and...
Nice.
Michael B. Jordan. Mm-hmm. And then Central Intelligence.
We're going through them all. Has this become a Ludwig podcast?
I guess so. Black Panther, Creed 2, Tenant.
Black Panther is when he first won.
Yeah. So it's really like his partnership with Ryan Coogler has been the best thing for him, which led to Tenant, which led to Oppenheimer.
Crazy.
Oh, he was doing music for Community.
I like this guy.
And Happy Endings.
Love this guy.
Yeah, I thought that might that might work for you. So yeah, the music in Oppenheimer is fine. I mean, that's Nolan's trick. We talked about it before. It's like montage styling with a big score over top. So the music has to work or else the montage doesn't work.
So mean to Christopher Nolan. That's Nolan's trick. That's how he gets you to think you care about his movies.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. But I didn't have a strong feeling about the scores for any of the other movies. So
personally, I think Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny should have won, but whatever.
Of course.
You can't get, how do you get nominated for a movie that already has an iconic score? Like you only get the, you get the nomination once and you're done.
Yeah. Was it Williams just using a lot of the same like stuff that he had used 30 years ago, 40 years ago?
I'm sure a lot of this, but he probably has to do new stuff to get nominated.
Yeah. Just added a piano key to everything. Best animated short. I don't think we watched any of them.
No.
Best live action short. Didn't watch any of them.
I watched the Wes Anderson one.
Oh yeah. Henry Sugar was a big deal.
I enjoyed it. It was very enjoyable short. It's, I mean, I don't know if it should have won, but.
I saw some people were mad. They're like, can Wes Anderson really, like, it's supposed to be a category that kind of gives some like shine to lesser names. It's just Wes Anderson.
He made a short. What the fuck do you want him to do? Has he ever even won an Oscar?
No, this was his first Oscar.
Then what the fuck are you mad about? Move on. If this is the only Oscar he ever gets, like, that's a thing to get way madder about.
Yeah, it's not like it's, who's the director who's won the most? Spielberg winning like a short?
I don't know. Oh yeah, Spielberg. Yeah, that would be weird.
Documentary short, haven't watched, but the guy that accepted the award, was that Ben or Chris? They were cool up there.
That was great, yeah.
20 Days in Maripol. Didn't watch like documentary feature.
Nope.
International feature. I'm happy Zone of Interest won.
That was great.
I would have been crushed had it not. Just in the fact of like losing faith. We were like, this is clearly like this just clearly should win. If it doesn't, something is wrong.
Although I was happy to see Wim Wenders get another Oscar nomination because that's probably the last one he'll ever get.
Yeah, I was going to go see Perfect Days and then got caught up writing about Dune 2 and didn't get to go watch it. So I'm hoping to see it soon.
Yeah.
I need to just watch through Vim's filmography.
Yeah, he's got a lot of great ones.
Vimography?
very good. The Jimmy Kimmel's rubbing off on you too.
Yeah. I've been doing this before Kimmel. No, he's older than me.
And better.
Hey, best animated feature, Boy and the
Heron. I bet you're better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Best animated feature, Boy and the Heron. I disagree with that.
Of course you do.
I get that the animation is awesome and like it's Miyazaki, but I think if this wasn't a Miyazaki film, it's maybe nominated just because there's not a lot of contenders. But I don't think it's winning. I mean, the story is still. That was the one that came out to math.
Of course.
When I mentioned the Twitter conversation about like the math of things, it was joking. We were talking about The Boy and the Heron versus Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I just think The Boy and the Heron underdevelops pretty much like every narrative element.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody tried to argue that I need to just appreciate other art forms. That are subtle and
Chris.
Not like Marvel movies, which made me laugh. I was like, what like art for, like what style of narrative am I disrespecting here? And they sent me some like Wikipedia link to what was like a Japanese based style of narrative. And I was like,
right.
It still just talks about narrative. Like, it doesn't forgive people for underdeveloping like characters and plot points. It just talks about the structure of the story. It's completely different than underdeveloping.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would have to read whatever this guy sent you, but like I'm almost inclined to agree in a way. Like I just think there's, well, there are different, I guess we've talked about this a lot. Like to me, like, a lot of discussion around narrative it does seem like it comes down to math a lot. And like, it just like, I'm just like, I don't even, something like The Boy and the Heron. Like, I know what you're saying. Like, certain things are underdeveloped in quotes compared to like a way a lot of other stories handle, a lot of movies handle their stories. But I think this kind of movie, I appreciate for what it is. I'm with you. Like, I didn't exactly love this movie. But I did enjoy watching it, and I think I enjoy watching it more just from the perspective of Miyazaki and knowing his career and knowing what the movie means to him. Like, I'm okay with the narrative not being as sound in the traditional sense if it's properly addressing all of the other stuff that matters to Miyazaki. And like, we can have a discussion about that too, whether or not it is, whether or not it's emotionally powerful and working and all that. But I'm okay if it isn't narratively as sound in quotes as Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think it's not narratively sound in the sense that it's just like, it's doing something softer, different, like, you know, something like Memoria, the Peach-a-Pong Worst Ethical movie. Mm-hmm. That is a different style of like narrative and development yeah. and structure that's like different, but so dynamic and knows like what it's doing and why. Not like Miyazaki didn't know what he was doing and why, but it just felt like there were ideas in there that he wanted to explore that didn't necessarily get the time to build or breathe, or that maybe even gelled with some of what was going on.
I agree with you, yeah.
So it's like you have these ideas that are in there, but also just the basic story that's being told. And I don't think the two always like mesh together.
I know what you mean. I think that's true, and probably why the movie ultimately doesn't really work.
Yeah. But it's fun, and it has like some seemingly powerful aspects to it. But that power, I think, doesn't get realized as much. And like Across the Spider-Verse, I don't think is flawless in any way, and arguably doesn't achieve in the same way that Into the Spider-Verse did, especially being like the middle piece of a trilogy and being as open-ended as it is. There's always that tension of, can you tell a full story when you're a bridge between the beginning and the end? It's not like I think that it's a flawless movie or anything, but I feel like it does everything that The Boy and the Heron's doing and then is a little better.
I would have to see it, but yeah, I would have to see it.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly excited to watch it.
The big winner to me would have been Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
They should have given the award to it even though it wasn't nominated.
I know. That's where they fucked up. Best Adapted Screenplay, American Fiction.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
I can't remember if we talked about this in the previous Oscar episode, but it really is strange to me. Like, is adapted screenplay like is it just the one that adapts the source material the best?
Right.
Did I say daps or adapts? The one that adapts the source material the best? They dap. Yeah. Did it dap well? Did it dap bad? Or the one that's just like the best movie that has source material?
Maybe they have instructions about that when you vote, but I have no idea. I doubt it. I think it's just like, in my mind, it's just a way to give two screenplays an Oscar, basically.
Yeah, right. Because if I look at the idea of like faithfully adapting, then Zone of Interest is a pretty bad adaptation of the novel that it comes from. And Poor Things as well is kind of a bad adaptation of the original novel. Like, the original novel is two different perspectives. You have like the guy's perspective and then Bella's perspective, and Bella's writing letters throughout. And then there's even a question of if the story of Bella is actually objectively what happened to her or a subjective representation of what she experienced. And you don't have any of that going on in the movie. Like, all of that tension is missing.
Mm-hmm.
Then American Fiction also has like a lot more going on, but seems a lot more like it holds better to the original novel.
Gets to the heart of it.
Yeah. So that's strange to me.
Sure.
So I don't mind Zone of Interest losing here, but I also am curious about, I wouldn't expect American Fiction to win here.
I guess to me, when I saw the nominees being read out, I was like, American Fiction feels like the most writerly movie of this bunch. Like it's like, and it's funny because I did see on Twitter, somebody wrote, like posted the first page of the screenplay. You saw this, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, it did have a very like screenplay 101 feel to it. Like get your themes out on the first page. And to me, kind of actually a little bit of an annoying elementary way. Like I would expect the movie to be a little bit more subtle or just introduce the theme in a more interesting way than just like speaking it out loud to you right there in the opening scene. But but knowing that about this movie, like that's just how the movie felt to me. Like it's very written. So it didn't surprise me that it would win this particular award.
It is very written. It has that like literary feel to it,
right?
Maybe in a way that like Oppenheimer doesn't. I will say I kind of disagreed with that first page, not what you were saying, but the tweet.
Oh, I completely disagreed.
Yeah, like I commented politely just being like, what do you see as the main theme that's going on? Because the opening scene, he's teaching a class about Flannery O'Connor and has the name of a short story on the board that has the N-word in it. And a white student is very like upset about the word being on the board. And he's just like, why are you upset about it? Like, I've gotten over it. Like, should it you? And that does get at a deeper theme of kind of some of Monk's self-loathing that he's dealing with in the movie. But I don't know if that's what the person making the tweet was getting at. And the rest of the movie, is it really getting at that
right
tension between like him and a student in that way, or him in literature? Like, it's a good first scene, but I don't think it captures some of the main themes of the movie in the way that that tweet made it seem, because the themes kind of differ greatly from what that scene's kind of getting at.
I mean, I haven't even watched the movie, but just reading that first page, it felt more to me like that was a stylistic way of leaning into the energy of the movie and like the topics it would be exploring, like using comedy to introduce you to this like very uncomfortable subject, you know?
That very much so. Like, it definitely sets the tone in a way that's like strong and accurate, but the themes are a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Glad it won.
Best original screenplay, Anatomy of a Fall. Sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. A bunch of movies right here that are very like they feel written, you know, the holdovers. Yeah. Like it's just a bunch of people talking.
Yeah. I could see Past Lives. Maybe.
Yeah.
I would have gone that. Like, it's cool that May December got nominated too, though Sammy Birch has gotten a lot of flack for the screenplay.
Oh, really?
Just people saying that it was exploitative of the situation, then others getting that it's supposed to be pointing out the exploitation of the situation. And yeah, the pitfalls of when you make a movie that touches on like pop culture.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
But Justine Triet said that during the Oscars, Spielberg, or like, you know, in the Oscar like rush when you're meeting everybody, that Spielberg said he was a big fan of Anatomy of the Fall. And once her husband that she wrote it with, her partner?
It sounded like it.
Wants them to write a screenplay for him.
Whoa, cool.
Yeah, so yeah, Justine was saying that it's just like, it's madness. Like, it's strange. So we might be seeing like Spielberg's next movie written by the Anatomy of a Fall writers.
Love it.
Yep. Best Supporting Actress, Divine Joy Randolph.
Yeah, that was expected.
Yeah, I still think she was like really good, but it also just makes me wonder if I had the wrong expectations of what like supporting, like what a supporting role should be, needs to have. I guess I always thought of it as kind of like a bigger thing, but I guess you're really just highlighting somebody that was really good in a not leading role.
Yeah, that sounds to a T what the award is for.
Yeah, I just always thought it was like more about, I guess, the math of the character. Not to like keep leaning into the joke, but how much, like, not how much a character was involved that was it a lead, but just that some of that mattered a bit more. And really, it's just how powerful was that performance and the time that it had.
Yeah, and I think in that sense, she totally deserved it.
Yeah, her character felt so palpable on screen.
Yeah, I thought she did not. The one thing I really think about in that movie more than anything is a moment that involves her. And, you know, she has her whole storyline where she decides to go to Boston with the other two guys, and she's just going to stay at her friend's house or at her sister's house. And there's a whole buildup to her going there, but we don't see anything happen really between them. We just get this one quick shot of her just laughing with her sister on the bed. And I just thought that was like such a beautiful moment that we didn't really need more than that, that we kind of got the catharsis she got from this trip, that she was ready to open up with her family again. I don't know. I love that it was just kind of efficient in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you kind of get her journey and to the end of the journey, and it just gives you the slight, like, little, is it this nice? It moves on.
Yeah, I love it.
Best supporting actor, Downey Jr. Yeah.
I'm glad he got it.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. Like, he was intense in the role. It was another thing where I'm just like, was there enough? And it's like, yeah, I guess there was.
He has a whole, like, his own storyline in the movie.
Yeah. With storylines.
Well, like, yeah, it's a Nolan storyline.
Yeah. I still, like, compared to, like, Mark Ruffalo, like, I think Mark Ruffalo's role as, like, Duncan is a little more of what I think about for, like, classically as a supporting actor or actress role, in terms of it's a very, like, important role. He has a lot of moments throughout. There's a whole arc going on, but he definitely... I think if it was just quality of the character and performance, I would have preferred Ruffalo in this case, but sure. I'm happy for Downey.
I mean, that's a who's who right there, that whole lineup. Ryan Gosling, too, like the fact that they're honoring like entertainment value, like yeah. Ryan Gosling just jumping through all of the hoops he jumps through in that movie and being funny as hell. Like, I wish they would give out more nominations for performances like that.
Yeah. I mean, when I was watching American Fiction, I was literally in the theater thinking, it's a shame that Sterling K. Brown won't get nominated for this, because I just didn't think it was the kind of movie that would get a nomination.
Right.
And then he did, and I was like very excited because he crushed that role. Like, he's such a force. Best actress going to Emma Stone made sense to me.
Yeah, I guess that was more of a competition that I thought Lily Gladstone like had it in the bag, but then I read afterwards that they had been trading back and forth all award season. So in the moment I was very surprised that Emma Stone won.
I guess there's the momentum for Gladstone, but Poor Things, just in terms of like the meaning of the role, like the momentum around not just the role itself but what the role meant. But Poor Things was such like an original creation.
Yeah, I think part of it for me is like and this is not fair to Emma Stone. Like, she's awesome. She's been nominated for Oscars 5 times now. Like, she has become a classic actress in that sense. Like, we're going to remember her for decades now. And I still just think of her as the girl from Superbad. Like, yeah. Every time I see her, I can't help but like remember like the first time I saw her in a movie, or like Easy A or something.
Yeah.
To think of her now like a 5-time Oscar nominated actress, 2-time winner, like, oh yeah, she's on a different playing field now.
It's strange because I do remember specifically the same way I had the Sterling K. Brown thought when watching Superbad, like I knew who some of the other actors were, right? And I remember seeing Emma Stone and thinking she's going to be like all these other like actors you see in these like rom-coms like this, comedies like this, that just kind of have a role and are like an important part of the movie, but then you never really see them again. I don't know why I thought that at the time, but yeah, there was just something, I didn't see it or get it then the way that you do for some people you see in a role earlier. You're just like, oh, this person's going to, like, this is not the last that we see of them.
Yeah, right.
But when Easy A came around and watching that, it just, the star power was a million times larger.
Yeah.
And that was the one where I was like, oh, I get it. She's going to be like popular, but I didn't realize how good she was going to be.
Yeah. Crazy. I also say that Carey Mulligan and Maestro, like, that really blew me away. Like, I do enjoy Carey Mulligan. She's in Drive, which is one of my favorite movies ever. I think she's great, but she kind of goes to another level, Maestro, and it's pretty amazing to watch.
Okay. You're getting me to watch Maestro.
And it's Bradley Cooper. Like, they both do a kick-ass job.
Yeah. I mean, Sandra Hüller in, or Hüller in Anatomy of the Fall and Zone of Interest.
Oh, yeah.
She could have been nominated and won for either of those roles. She had a crazy year.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Best actor going to Killian. Like, I'm happy for him.
That made me happy.
Yeah.
But, man, I did, like, the whole time, I was like, all right, Killian Murphy's going to win. And I want him to win because he's Killian Murphy. Like, I remember that dude in 28 Days Later. Like, he's the best. He should be honored. But, like, when the night finally came, I was just, like, looking at Paul Giamatti, like, man, like, I want Killian Murphy to win, but if Paul Giamatti did win, like, I would be so happy and secretly maybe happier.
I did not want Paul Giamatti to win, weirdly.
Really?
I like Paul Giamatti. I want him to win. I just didn't think that that role... I don't think The Holdover should be, like, an award-winning movie.
Oh. Okay. I mean, I loved it, but I get it. Like, it's not for everybody.
I liked it. It just, to me, it feels very much, like I said it before, like any kind of fun comedy from the 80s or 90s that has like a serious dramatic edge to it in some ways as well. I get that it has better performances than that and like is a bit more elevated than that, but at the same time, it still feels... to me, like, there are better performances and better movies out there that I would nominate way before.
Well, that's usually the case with all like so many other better performances.
Yeah, but yeah, I would have been happy for Giamatti. Like, I would have begrudgingly accepted it, but I was same way with Killian. Like, I begrudgingly accept. Like, I'm happy for him.
I would have been okay with it because this would have just been, because it's basically the same character from Sideways. So like it's like he would have won for Sideways instead.
Well, now that is definitely one I can get behind. Sideways, I had no idea what to expect in that movie and then just absolutely loved it.
Man, that movie makes me laugh harder than like Superbad is probably top of the list, but Sideways is probably at the top five. Hmm.
It's a great one. Okay. Best director going to Nolan and best picture going to Oppenheimer.
We knew that.
Yeah. Still disappointing to me. But I'm happy for him.
Yeah. Again, like you said, like his speech was nice and I was like, I'm happy. Like I want him to win this. If this is the only time he ever wins, like sure. Like that's fine.
Yeah. Unless he comes out with something that's like truly next level, and then we're all like, you know what, he earned that second one.
Yeah, well, he did do that with Tenet, but nobody cared.
No, nobody cared, and that was not one that would win a best picture.
No,
though if it did win a best picture, I think I would question pretty much everything I've ever known about anything.
I would finally understand everything.
Oh my god. I still, as like much as I say it, I still would have given it to Glazer and Zone of Interest for both director and whatchamacallit.
Yeah.
Best Picture.
Yeah, of all the movies nominated for Best Picture, I still think Past Lives is my favorite. But, yeah, I haven't seen Zone of Interest, though, so we'll see.
Well, Travis, I think it's your lucky day.
Is that what you want to do?
I just saw that it's coming to HBO Max soon. but I forgot what day it was coming to HBO Max. So I should look that up real fast.
Yeah, let's see. Because if it isn't coming this week, like, maybe we should do Poor Things.
Oh, yeah, we should do Poor Things. Okay. Damn it. Yeah.
I mean, if it's coming, the Max... Here, let's see. Oh, gosh. I write for Forbes, but I can't look at this article. Jesus
no,
Christ.
No, why should you be able to do that?
I'm not seeing a hard date on this.
Zone of Interest, HBO Max.
God, every site's making me fucking go through the ad, jump through the ad hoops.
Let me go back to the tweet that I saw. Profile, compelling stuff. April 5th, so a long time away.
Okay, I mean, we can still watch it if you want, though.
Yeah, because you can, but let's do Poor Things first. Let's do Poor Things first.
Okay. Plenty of time to do Zone of Interest.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless my baby is born in the next couple weeks, then we don't have time for it.
Yeah. Which will probably be the case.
Probably.
Okay.
All right.
But Poor Things next.
Poor Things is next. I'm excited about that. I want to see it.
Oh, yeah. You still haven't watched that.
I haven't. I've seen scenes from it. Like, I get a general vibe. I mean, I've also seen several Yorgos Lanthimos movies, so I know kind of what to expect. But I also feel like maybe in a way I don't know what to expect. Like, there just seem like a bit of a zany energy to it that's, I don't know. I'm interested to see what it's like.
Well, we shall see. Tune in next week.
All right. You ready for this, Chris?
Oh, yeah. Born ready.
Okay. This is everybody's favorite part of the show. They had to sit here for an hour and a half for this. So let's not disappoint them.
All right. Give them what they want.
All right. Here we go. Lights.
Camera.
See ya.
I
don't know anymore. I don't know.
You take that back. You know perfectly well.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.